Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee for May 1st. It is May Day. And we are going to start with House Bill 2027A today. And I'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2027A. And Beth, if you can provide us with an overview, plug my computer in.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2027A extends the sunset on the landowner preference tags program to January 2nd, 2020. It authorizes the transfer of landowner preference tags for hunting deer or elk to the persons of landowner choosing. It directs ODFNW to implement the landowner damage program to address damage caused by elk on privately owned lands in Oregon and amends the definition of immediate family. And you also have a dash A3 amendment in front of you that changes the definition of immediate family to include sons-in-laws and daughters-in-laws.
Okay, and did we want to have the department? Do you want to come up first, Mr. Melcher and company? And where is the A3? Is that from you, the A3 amendment? Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I apologize, I did not get signed up on your testimony sheets. You were too quick to withdraw those for all three of our bills. So. I am providing some brief written comments or written testimony, and then I have Ron Anglin here with me as well. Ron led up our stakeholder process that came up with many of these recommended changes, or actually essentially with all these recommended changes. But I'll just go at a very high level to begin with. Our landowner preference program was first adopted by the legislature in 1981. As the department and the commission developed controlled hunt programs primarily in eastern Oregon, but also in western Oregon, for many landowners. In many cases, they were not able to draw a tag each year, a tag to even hunt on their own property. The department, the legislature, saw this as an inequity, if you will, that private landowners were supporting wildlife throughout the year, and to not have the ability to hunt on their own land did not seem fair. So the landowner preference program was developed in the early 1980s to provide that certainty to landowners that met certain minimum acreage criteria. Over the last three decades, then, the landowner preference program had gone through a number of legislative reviews and amendments and changes, numerous sunset extensions as well. And the last review, which was in 2009, there was much angst amongst the landowning and hunting communities. We could not come to a real good agreement on ways to change or improve the program. So at that time in 2009, we asked the legislature just simply to extend the sunset and give us a little more time to work through issues. We've done that. We came here initially actually with two bills, House Bill 2250 and House Bill 2251, which were mere extensions of the current programs and current sunsets. We had a stakeholder group that worked, and I think many of them are here today and probably going to talk to you as well, to develop recommended changes, and they were successful in doing that and reaching consensus. So what you have before you in House Bill 2027A is it reflects the consensus of the stakeholder group. And then, as you mentioned, Chair Dingfelder, we do have a small amendment, the dash A3 amendment, which merely clarifies that the definition of family member includes sons-in-laws and daughters-in-laws. I'm going to let Ron Anglin tell you a little bit about the specific changes to the programs that we have here, as Ron did work through the group, and they are also highlighted on page 2 of the written testimony.
Okay, Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. As Kurt said, we did pull together landowners and the hunting community to talk about the program. We met over the course of the winter about five different times. We had people from Burns and Hood River that traveled here to Salem to meet with us through the winter. And really, we came down to a common agreement on six different changes that are identified there on the second page that got at some of the things that the landowner community was looking for in providing some flexibility for them to deal with damage, and got at some things that the hunting community was looking for in their mind tightening up the program a little bit. So as Kurt mentioned, we originally had two separate bills that we had to submit a year ago as part of our legislative concept process. So once we came up with the recommendations, I'm sure you'll appreciate this, the relating clauses in the bills didn't accommodate all the changes. So we were fortunate that Representative Clem had a bill with a broader relating clause. He was willing to work with us and allow us to transfer everything over into this new bill. So that's what you have in front of you. As Kurt mentioned, we have several of the participants here today, and if you wanted from their perspectives, I'm sure they can provide you that. This is a good program. It's been very effective in working with landowners and providing them hunting opportunity, and I think that it does go a long ways towards firming up relationships between the hunting and the landowner community also. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll see if there's any questions. Any questions for the department? Senator Olson.
I have one. You had mentioned that you added daughters-in-laws and son-in-laws, and then the bill had brothers-in-law and sisters-in-law, that you did that just to incorporate if you're married and it's your dad's land. And yeah, that's the dash three. Do we have the dash three?
Madam Chair, committee members, yes, it's in your packet on Olson in the back.
It just says on page four of the printed A and gross bill, line 28, after sons, insert sons-in-law, and after daughters, insert daughters-in-law.
So, Chair Dinkfelder, it's one of those that as you start naming everybody, if you find out you left somebody out, then they can't go. So when you were real broad, it covered everybody, but as we started refining things over time through the statutory language, we realized there were some folks that were inadvertently being excluded.
One follow-up.
Follow-up.
This doesn't increase the amount of game that can be taken, or does it?
Well, Chair Dinkfelder and Vice Chair Olson, to a degree, I would say that it does, in that it expands the Southwest Oregon pilot program for control or for antlerless elk tag or antlerless elk take in areas where we have damage. It does expand that statewide. So, certainly in some focused areas where we have intense elk agricultural damage, it may in fact lead to an increase in participation in the program. But by and large, with that exception, these changes don't lead to any additional animals taken. In fact, it just leads to some additional flexibility for how landowners use the tags. And then in the case of mule deer, it ties the mule deer tags for landowners to the management unit management objective. And so there could actually be a decrease in some units of mule deer buck tags anyway.
Follow up. So the department, ODFW, will still manage what's taken and when and where and why and how?
Chair Dinkfelder, Vice Chair Olson, absolutely, that's correct.
Thank you.
Senator Olson, or Hansel, sorry.
Boy, listen.
He's good looking,
I
too.
I know. I was like, sorry about that. I'm so used to saying Senator Olson.
You've insulted both of us.
Yeah.
No, actually, two things. So, one, we've used that program in some of the land that we've had up in the Blue Mountains, and it's been well received and has worked out really well. And so I would be very supportive of it. And secondly, I like the sons and daughters-in-law, because sometimes your son-in-law is actually the one that would be managing your operation, because he's married to your daughter and it's back doing it, and that would be a major glitch and vice versa too. Sometimes it's the daughter-in-law that would be excluded from, and they're running the operation, so.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you, Senator Hansel. Got that right this time.
Yeah.
I just want to make a note, I think as committee staff mentioned, that there is a revenue impact, and I'm assuming that's because of the increase in the number of tags that are being issued or sold.
Chair Dingfelder, that's correct. There is a potential increase in the number of landowners that will participate because it removes the minimum acreage on the elk damage program. So there could be an increase in revenue associated with that.
Was this accommodated for, I should know this since we already had your budget, was this accommodated for in the governor's proposed budget?
Chair Dingfelder, we have no policy package associated with this, so there is some slight increase in revenue, but no plans, I guess, if you will, to spend that revenue.
That was my next question. Where will this go back into sort of wildlife?
Yeah, Chair Dingfelder, so any additional revenues that are not planned for on the expenditure side then will go back into our ending balance.
Okay. We have a few more folks that like to testify on this, but thank you, and I know you'll be here for the rest of the bills in case there's additional questions. We have Al Elkins from the Oregon Hunters Association and Mike from the OFIC. Excellent. I can never say your last name, Mike. I should know better. After all these years.
Thank you.
Hi, Al. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. We were part of the work group. It was an incredible experience. We basically rebuilt the program from the ground up and it needed to be. And the reason that we were able to do that is because of ODFW's ability to get us data within a very short period of time that impacted everything statewide, from the number of tags to the number of landowners to just about anything we needed. So we greatly appreciated the opportunity, and we support this bill wholeheartedly. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mike?
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Dyksel, Director of Forest Protection for the Oregon Forest Industries Council here in Salem. It was probably my third work group of dealing with landowner preference revisions, and I'll go along with Mr. Elkins here as far as the end results. I think we came away each with a different perspective of each other's concerns, the hunting community of the landowners of the hunting community. We have had a chair change within our Animal Damage Committee, and Mark Wall with Roseburg Resources in Coos Bay and myself represented OFIC at the table, and I think the compromises that were made really benefited the whole program moving forward. I think everyone has a different understanding, different appreciation. It gives us a little bit more tools to deal with animal damage specific to elk, and so we're very pleased with the results and encourage you to vote it out.
Thank you. Any questions for these gentlemen? All right, thank you, and thanks for your time serving on the task force, or work group, I should say. And we have Jim Welch and Katie Fast. And did anybody else want to testify on House Bill 2027A? Okay, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Oregon Farm Bureau is in support of House Bill 2027 and also the -3 amendments. The landowner preference program is important for Oregon's landowner community in giving them the ability to both hunt, have a hunting opportunity on their own property, and then also to deal with damage situations. And the expansion that comes in this program for elk is, I think, going to assist landowners in dealing with elk depredation, and we're excited to see that piece. I would say, and just in terms of the work group, I think everyone came and was able to give a little bit and get a little bit through the process, and it was a very long, tedious one. So I commend the department for pulling the group together and kind of working us through coming to a piece of legislation everyone can support. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you. We'll hear from Mr. Welch first.
Chair Dingfelder and committee members, Jim Welch, Oregon Cattlemen Association. And we not only were involved in this process, we had a list of things that we we're trying to improve in the program and for the landowner, certainly. And we did in the previous five-year review process also. And comparing the two, it's amazing. My hat's off to certainly Ron Anglin and his efforts working with us, keeping us really on track, having the ability to provide the kind of information we needed with the questions, because this was a very insightful group that was asking good questions. And we didn't get everything that we thought we would like to have for landowner community, but I think it helped us all realize that there's more in common that we had and could agree upon than I think we expected when we got into the process. But we support the Dash 3 amendments and support this bill, and hope that you will favorably vote for this and pass it out with a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for either of these panelists? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. I see that I have a representative in the audience. Representative Clem, did you want to testify?
Just watching what you're doing with my relating clause.
It's only a public hearing, just so you know.
Seems okay at the moment.
Thank you for sending over this really good bill. Seems like there's consensus on the bill. Anybody else would like to testify on this bill? Okay, we will go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2027A, and we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2252A. Beth, provide an overview, please.
2390.
So, House Bill 2252 authorizes the Fish and Wildlife Commission to establish multi-year licenses. It allows issuing agents to charge certain fees and provides that non-resident members of uniformed services our residents for purchase of certain license tags and permits. There is a Dash 2 amendment in your packet in the back of the room and on OLIS that requires ODF&W to review any black bear, cougar, and any other wildlife management plan once every 5 years.
I said 2252A, didn't I?
You did, yes.
Yep, so you just read the wrong bill.
That is 2252. The
multi
year license?
Oh, yeah. Is that what, did you? I thought you had read the bill. Okay, I just want to make sure that we were on the same one, because I was doing this one first. Okay.
Yes.
Just want to make sure. So we have, we probably have the department that wants to come back up on this one. And then we have some other people like to, so we have Kurt and Ron, okay. Okay, welcome back.
Good afternoon
it's
again.
It's Wildlife Day in the
yes,
Senate.
Yes, it is. It's a good day. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I have Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator, with me here today as well. And I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk with you about House Bill 2252, which it accomplishes three primary goals, I guess, or objectives, if you will, and we're really excited about all three of these. First of all, House Bill 2252 will extend our resident fishing and hunting license fee structure to all active duty military. So currently in the state, if you're active duty military and you're stationed in Oregon, or you're active duty military and you maintain a residence in Oregon, that is, you continue to file Oregon income taxes, you already qualify as a resident. This bill will extend that resident fee structure, which is much reduced from the non-resident fee structure, to all active duty military, frankly, regardless of their state of residence. We think that this is not only is it the right thing to do to recognize those service members in their service to our country, but also we view this as an opportunity to do some targeted marketing to these non-residents as well. Secondly, this bill, House Bill 2252, also provides the commission with the flexibility to issue a multiple-year license and to determine what an appropriate discounted rate may be for such a license. So a number of states have done this. About 10 states across the country now have multiple-year licenses. It's, frankly, it's another marketing tool a way to encourage hunters and anglers to participate for multiple years. It secures our federal match across the span of the years for the term of the license, and you know, a sizable part of our budget comes from the federal match associated with fishing and hunting license sales. And we think that with an appropriate discount, we will actually be able to recruit and retain additional anglers and additional hunters into our customer base. And as I mentioned, a number of states are doing this, and they are seeing some response. I believe a couple states initiated it just this year, and at least in one of those states, in the first month of sales, 10% of their license sales were the multi-year variety as opposed to single year. And then lastly, this House Bill 2252 increases some license agent fees, and in particular two particular license agent fees. So just for by way of background, our license agents are all delivered through a private vendor system. We have almost 500 point-of-sale agents across the state. Each of those agents, when they deliver one of our licensed products, there's a $2 agent surcharge. The agent that delivers the product gets to retain half of that, in other words, $1, and then approximately another $1 goes to our vendor that operates the system. So our system is private, and the individuals that deliver licenses are also private business entities. In 2009, when we, with the help of the Oregon Hunters Association and others, we created a new juvenile sport pack. So for juveniles, there'd always been the opportunity for juveniles to buy individual licenses. We had an adult sport pack, which is 9 individual licensed products. You get about a 10% discount when you buy them in the form of a sport pack. Those 9 documents, when purchased through a sport pack, costs $165. The agent fee on those is $5. When we created the juvenile sport pack in 2009, simply through bill drafting, the agent fee got left at the standard $2 level. So for our license agents who are delivering 9 documents to an individual customer, we felt it appropriate to have the license agent fee be the same for juvenile sport packs as well as for adult sport packs, and that's $5. So right now a juvenile sport pack is $50. You get basically a $165 license package for juveniles for $50, which is a good bargain. The second thing it does is it increases the license agent surcharge for certain non-resident products. So many of our non-resident licenses are very expensive. For instance, a fishing license is $140, an elk tag roughly $500. If an individual comes here from out of state and purchases a non-resident hunting license, a deer tag and an elk tag, they spend about $1,100. Under our current system, for that $1,100 transaction through one of our vendors, the agent fee is $6 on an $1,100 transaction. The agent that delivers the product only gets to keep $3 on an $1,100 transaction. And in most cases, they're purchased with debit cards or Visa cards, and the charges, the bank charges alone exceed, in many cases, the license agent fee. So our vendors are losing money on these transactions. And for many of them, for the big box retailers, we don't hear from them losing $10 or $20 on a transaction. They don't, you know, we don't have them complaining to us. But for a lot of the small sole proprietors, it's a big deal to lose $10 or $20 on a license transaction. So we're proposing to increase those non-resident license agent fees to $10 in this bill, House Bill 2252. So with that, I meant to make one other point as well on the piece for active duty military. In my limited research, if this bill passes, we will be the only state that does that, that offers active duty military the resident fee structure. With that, Chair Dingfelder, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I got Ron here as well if there's specific hunting questions that I can't answer.
Great. I have a couple, but I'll see if, Senator, any of my colleagues have a question. Senator Olson, now you can see why I automatically say Senator Olson, because I know there's usually a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One thought that came to my mind, and this is a great idea, the multi-year license. You're going to get a surge of money up front when you sell these multi-year license. Will you be able to put that money down the road and not have it get taken, or not come back and say you need more money down the road because you spent that surge up front?
Yeah. Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, it's a very good question. First of all, with regard to our ending balance, and we are an agency that operates, um, we We generally increase our fees every 6 to 8 years. So in the early part of a fee cycle, we are generating more revenue than we're spending. And then in the latter half of that, we're spending down our ending balance. We're able to do that and protect those ending balances because of the federal match. We get a sizable component of our fish and wildlife management dollars through the federal government, and it's match associated with the sale of our licenses. And there are federal regulations that prohibit those license dollars that, where they're providing match, it prohibits those license dollars from being swept into other non-fish or wildlife related activities. So in terms of these dollars, again, they'll be protected in the same manner that our current license dollars are protected from sweeps. As far as our ability to spend or not spend it over the course of the duration of the life cycle of the license, if you will, we basically have that trajectory planned out. We come here with a budget limitation to spend dollars. We always have, as I mentioned, we always have dollars that we cannot spend because we don't have the limitation, and these dollars over the life of that license would be in the same category. So they'd sit in our ending balance over the trajectory.
I appreciate you mentioned sweeps because that was going to be my next question. That was my concern.
Okay.
But I'm glad that you covered that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you for the question. Senator Bates.
Does this bill apply to disabled vets who get a discounted license ready? Can they buy a multi-year license also?
Senator Dingfelder and Senator Bates, excellent question. We've had a number of comments on the House side that were similar, and this bill gives the Commission the authority to issue multi-year licenses. So we're going to be looking at a number of license packages, including some of our free licenses and or our reduced fee licenses, as you mentioned, the reduced fee disabled veteran license. We have a free license that goes to Pioneer, you know, individuals who are over than 65 and live in the state for 50 years. Currently, we do those annually. They have to renew them annually. Under the provisions of this bill, we will be looking at all those in terms of our ability to issue them for multiple years.
Thank you for the answer, and I hope you can go forward with that. I know a lot of disabled vets would like to get it once a year, you know, go by one time for a long time,
you yep.
know, whatever that is.
Precisely.
And I don't know why we have to go back and have someone go in every year to get a free license. Just give
yep.
one for life and get it over with.
Yep.
It would seem like a logical thing and save time and paperwork. Follow-up question?
Follow-up.
Steelhead and salmon tanks.
Chair Dingfelder and Senator Bates, right now we're looking at this in terms of just the base licenses, salmon steelhead cards. We're, of course, we need the information back annually. We ask that they be turned in annually. So right now, at least in our initial considerations of this, we're looking at the base licenses and not those add-ons like tags or obviously deer tags or elk tags.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for the department? Okay, I have a quick one regarding the agent, the vendor, I should say, fee and what they receive. How often is that reviewed? And, I mean, you know, a dollar obviously is not a lot of money to be paying. Obviously, this is something they do. They elect to do this. But can you talk a little bit about the process in which the state reviews compensation for the vendors?
Sure. Chair Dingfelder, the specific compensation, the agent fee, is set in statute.
Mm-hmm.
So the current $2 in the case of the sale of a regular license is set in statute. And then the $1 that goes to the agent that delivers the document is also in statute. Up until 2010, that fee was, I believe, was $1.50. So we did raise it. We raised the general agent fee in beginning in 2010. I think we raised it from $1.50 to $2, but I'd have to go back and check my numbers on that. So, you know, in most cases, when you're buying a $20 product, a $1 margin is adequate. The vendor, if they're being paid for with a Visa card, the vendor may not make money on the transaction. They don't lose money on the transaction. And, of course, they like having the customers in their store for other reasons besides just selling licenses. So it's generally, we don't hear complaints about the $1 associated with the lower value documents. We hear the complaints associated with the high value. You know, I'm you know, typical quote unquote, I'm bringing you $1,100, you know, and you should be very thankful for that. Why do I only get three and lose money on the transaction in the course of it? That's the, those are the comments we hear associated with those high dollar licenses. So.
Yeah, well, it's probably a legitimate concern. So
we think so as well. That's right. Why we brought it forward.
Right. I appreciate that. So, okay. Thank you very much.
And very good.
Like I said,
thank
we
you.
We have a few other folks, but if we have other questions, we may call you up. So we have Sally Mackler and Scott Beckstead. Good afternoon. Okay, whoever wants to go first. Scott? Sally?
Sure. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States, here today to express support for the amendment offered by Representative Peter Buckley to House Bill 2252. The position of the Humane Society of the United States is simply that there is not enough meaningful opportunity for peer review and public comment on Oregon's wildlife management plans. The Oregon Cougar Management Plan is particularly problematic because as soon as it was unveiled several years ago, it was immediately criticized almost unanimously by the top cougar biologists around the nation, who found severe flaws in the population models. And it's problematic because every time there's any sort of bill relating to cougars, we hear all sorts of numbers as to how many cougars there are, and those numbers very often are based on the Oregon Cougar Management Plan. And the problem is that the population data is so unreliable that there really is no way of knowing exactly how many cougars there are. So what this amendment does is it essentially creates an opportunity every 5 years for these wildlife management plans to be reviewed, scientifically peer-reviewed, so that the top biologists in the country can review and provide input on these plans. It also, just as importantly, provides the public with an opportunity to comment. And, you know, right now it feels like, for example, the Oregon Cougar Management Plan has been put up on the very top shelf. There is no opportunity for any sort of public comment. There is no opportunity for the public to find out, is the Cougar Management Plan working? How much is it costing? How many cougars are being killed? How many, you know, how many complaints are there, and so forth? That raw data is supplied by ODF&W, but there's no context for it. And this amendment that has been offered by Representative Buckley to House Bill 2252 would address these concerns by, again, allowing for scientific peer review and an opportunity for public comment. So that's all I have. I would urge a yes vote on those amendments. Thank you.
Yeah, and we also, colleagues, we got word Senator Representative Buckley would have been here, but he's apparently in a meeting with the governor, and I guess the governor had priority over coming to our committee, understandably. Mm-hmm. So that's where that amendment came from. Is that correct? That
correct,
is from
sure.
Representative Buckley. Okay, Sally, why don't you go ahead, and then we'll see if there's questions.
Thank you. My name's Sally Mackler. I'm representing Predator Defense. We're a national conservation organization based in Eugene, and we are supporting this amendment, which reinstates a requirement for a five-year periodic review of the Bear and Cougar Management Plan and all wildlife management plans. We feel that this provides a means for ensuring that the best and most current science is being used in wildlife management plans. And the Bear plan went for 13 years without getting updated, even though there was a five-year requirement until 2011. The Cougar plan has not been updated since 2006. There has been very limited peer review on the Cougar management plan, although it was very controversial. First limited review occurred in 2005. And as Scott mentioned, there was quite a number of prominent cougar experts that weighed in on the plan in terms of the methodology and also on the population information, as Scott mentioned. Another review occurred as a result of a budget note, which was placed on the budget in 2009 by Representative Buckley, requiring peer review. That netted more comments from Washington State University in particular, which is the preeminent institution that has spent over 15-plus years of current field research on cougar hunting and the effects of cougar hunting on conflicts with people, which I think is something that's extremely important because we are hearing a lot about risks to the public from cougars. And what their research has found that is that in heavily hunted areas, in prime deer habitat, actually increases the risk to the public by changing the ratio of juveniles in the population, juvenile cats in the population. These animals are the ones that are the most associated with conflict and most likely to come into areas that are human habitated. So we feel that it's extremely important that this body of research be considered in terms of the management plan and in terms of how the plan is enacted in the field. So we are asking for your support to this amendment so that our wildlife management plans can keep up with current science and keep decision makers informed as well as the public. Thank you for the opportunity to address you. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for either of the panelists? Senator Hansel and then Senator Olson.
I just want to make sure that Washington State could do a non-biased survey on cougars.
Got it.
Since that's their mascot.
Oh, just joking. I missed
that. I caught it. Washington. I'm not even a cougar. I'm a Bruin. I'm the Bears.
Is that a sports team? I'm sorry, that went right over my head.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, perhaps if we could get Washington to consider our data on duck models, we could accept their data on cougars.
That would work.
I guess because I come from a Pac-10 school, I got that one right away. Senator.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Would this amendment not be better in another bill, such as another one we're going to hear today?
I believe the relating clause was not appropriate for attachment to that bill. That was the initial attempt on Senator Buckley's part. I agree with you.
Pardon?
I do agree with you. Thank you. That would have been the more appropriate vehicle.
There was a relating clause issue, so he brought it forth in this bill or asked to have it considered in this bill.
Right.
Yeah. That's the way it works. It's a broad relating clause, as Rep. Clem knows. All right. Any other questions? Thank you for your
Thank
testimony
you.
Today. And I think Representative Clem wants to come up now.
Oh.
Or at least some little bird told me you did. Or something. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, state representative from right here, Salem. This is my district here where the Capitol is now, post-redistricting, so it's kind of fun. I actually did not come here to talk about this amendment. The same meeting Representative Buckley's in has my co-sponsor of a Save the Postal Service resolution hijacked, so I'm killing time until she finishes so we can go testify in rules. So I thought I'd pay attention to my other relating clause, and this is what I was worried about, frankly, something like this in my bill. But since this isn't my bill, I can't complain too much. I would just say, this issue wasn't raised, obviously, in the House at all by my colleague from the House. And I would just be careful we don't lose the underlying bill, because we do need that underlying bill. I suspect there's a cost to doing all this new request for peer review. And so I would prefer, having voted for the other bill and think it's a good idea not to lose it into a ways and means sort of thing. If you want to put it in the other cougar bill that's going to allow dogs to hunt, you can peer review that all day long as you pass that out to the floor. But if you choose not to do that, then I will have to find you another bill maybe. Representative Buckley and I have been back and forth over this peer review issue many, many times over the years, and we've agreed several times on budget notes to do it. So I, in particular, don't have a problem with the concept of peer review and have voted with him to do that before. I don't know if you ought to do it in this bill, given it's on such a wildly different topic versus something else. But I would also say maybe just let's just give the guy's name if we're going to go that go as far as we do here to say in an adjoining state from a carnivore biology. We all know we're talking about the carnivore lab whose mission it is to protect and preserve carnivores. And I don't think that's a problem. He's been here before to testify. I can't remember his name at the moment, but he's got a particular view, and the mission of their organization is one, and peer review should include that kind of perspective. But if we're going to start rattling off really specific people, basically, we ought to make sure we're doing other people who don't have a particular slant to an issue and don't have a mission that is uniquely focused on carnivore protection at the big carnivore lab. Not that there's anything wrong with the science, but you ought to put in five people probably if you're going to do it. And then I would just say pay attention to the cost to make sure we don't lose the other bill. And I don't know what else you're doing. I should leave probably. It's not appreciated. I just thought I'd speak for Representative Buckley since he's not here. I'm sure he would have said exactly what I just said. I'm positive of that.
Well, he may be here before before we adjourn. So thank you, Representative. Appreciate your comments. And just for the record, we do not have a fiscal yet, correct, on the dash twos, Jeff?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Representative. Anybody else that would like to testify on House Bill 2252 or the dash twos? Come on up, gentlemen. Yeah. Now this is 2390.
Oh, sorry.
So you're putting on the wrong sheet. Okay. Al, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association would like to speak, first of all, to the bill. We support the bill wholeheartedly. During a Williams and Means hearing, we pointed out the board applauded the allowing the active duty military personnel to hunt or fish in Oregon for the same cost as an Oregon resident. And the board just wants to go on record saying that wants to thank the department for doing that. To the amendment, Madam Chair, we're concerned, deeply concerned about the cost that this would incur in relation to taking money away from the field bios that are now in the field working and requiring them to do a lot more planning. We would prefer them working in the field and continuing to do what they're doing and the money be used for that as opposed to running four or five different plans every 5 years or continually updating them. So that's where we are in that amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Roger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer here representing the National Rifle Association on House Bill 2252 and specifically the dash twos. I guess the concerns of the NRA would be very similar to what you just heard from Mr. Elkins, the cost of using license dollars to pay for these ongoing plans. This is a very broad language. It's not just black bear and cougar management plans, but it also says any other wildlife management plan, which is virtually almost every other species out there that's managed by the department. So you would have these ongoing peer-reviewed plans going constantly, and the cost, again, you said you don't have a fiscal yet, but members of the National Rifle Association would be opposed to using our license dollars for this purpose. And I think it's unnecessary, like the original bill, to move forward without the amendment. Happy to answer any questions. Thank
you. Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions for either of these gentlemen? All right. Thank you very much. Anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? Come on up. Yes. Good afternoon, and if you can state your name for the record,
I will. My name is Jane Miller, and I represent Oregon Cougar Action Team and citizens throughout Oregon who are trying to create better policies and educational foundations to protect Oregon's cougar and the ecosystems they sustain. I apologize if I lose my voice. I'm getting hay fever earlier this year, but I'm giving you a document that speaks to the cause and the issues that this particular bill has been addressing. I have a copy of an outside, unbiased peer review of Oregon's Cougar Management Plan that was emailed to me by Dr. Robert B. Wilgus. He's the director of the Large Carnivore Conservation Lab Department, Natural Resources Scientist Services in Washington State University. He's published in peer review journals. He has been endorsed by the Smithsonian. He is considered one of the world's top large cat biologist. He was hired by ODFW to do an outside peer review of our current cougar management plan. And you have a copy of his evaluation in your hands of the review. It's titled Review of ODFW Evaluation of Cougar Removal on Human Safety Concerns, Livestock Damage Complaints, and Elk and Calf Ratios in Oregon. This document is talking about ODFW's Cougar Management Plan. And in it, he references page numbers and paragraphs as well. So this document, if you hold it up to ODFW's plan, you can follow what he evaluated. Senator Olson brought to my attention that the second paragraph is confusing. It says, unfortunately, this document and the resulting management recommendations contain a number of serious errors. Not the document you're holding in your hand. He's referencing Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's Cougar Management Plan. But in this, some of the things he talks about are the math ratios being incorrect and obsolete and sloppy. And it talks about, you know, on page 10, paragraph 1, ODFW was not able to achieve its target number of administrative removals because land ownership patterns precluded effective hunting with hounds. An alternative explanation could be that the estimated numbers of cougars and targeted numbers of kills were inflated to begin with, and that the expected numbers of kills could not be achieved at biologically realistic densities. We don't have an accurate cougar model population count. It was built on political agendas at the time. It was an arbitrary guess. These bills demand sound science. Oregonians deserve that they have sound science behind these bills. We don't have sound science in the current Cougar Management Plan. It is inaccurate and it's very flawed. He further goes on to explain page 13, paragraph 2 and 3, the descriptive results of cougar mortalities and deer fawns and numbers use no statistical tests and are meaningless. It is brutal what he goes through and analyzes our cougar management program. I am sad that we have such a bad cougar management program. We really deserve something far better, and we have the opportunity now to do that. In his summary, he states, no valid scientific conclusions supporting the beneficial effects of administrative removals can be drawn from the study. There was no scientific evidence that administrative removals achieved any of the stated goals, reduced complaints, livestock deprivations, and increased elk calves. The report lacks any scientific credibility. The authors must go back to the drawing board and begin again. And the authors are ODFW. The report lacks any scientific credibility. The authors must go back to the drawing board and begin again. The authors should consult with wildlife scientists and statisticians to obtain a reliable experimental design, analysis, and report. We recommend they consult with scientists at Oregon State University, University of Oregon, and other research universities to design a scientifically credible study. This needs to be, all of these need to be an outside, unbiased peer review, not done by Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department. And I spoke to Senator Olson earlier today, and he says, well, why should we believe Dr. Robert Wilgus, because all he references are his own writings, his own journals. Well, in the same content, why should we believe ODFW? Because I have also put here a spreadsheet for you, which there it is. I'd like you to take a look at it. This, and I talked to the Oregon State Police about this when I called to talk about their poaching ratios. I have here a number of mortalities by source from ODFW. It's right at the top. And then I also have the federal kills, which are right underneath it. And that top title is a little skewed. I apologize. But I have a little tick mark where Oregon goes down. The federal government killed over 1,194 cougar. We have our total hunter harvest, our damage, our human safety, administrative removals, and others in the top spreadsheet. But if you go down to the mandatory harvest reporting response, at the very end of that, you look at cougar. In 2007, it says there was a 5% tag report response. If you go up to the top bar here and look at 2007, it said that we killed 309 cougar, just hunter harvest. Okay, well then let's take a look at 2008. 2008 says we had a 17% tag response. If you look up here at 2008, we killed 273 cougar. And the numbers go on. They don't quite add up. It doesn't make sense because in 2009, we killed 274 cougar, but the tag report says we handed in 36% tags. So it's sloppy, and it's not sound science. And this is an opportunity for us to redeem ourselves and make better programs of which we would be proud to present in journals and as scientifically based information that Oregon is doing the right thing with its ecosystems and its wildlife. And we can publish that worldwide, and it can be used as sound science. Because right now, ODFW's management plan did get in the Smithsonian Magazine in 2006 as one of the worst plans not based on science in the whole wide world. Dr. Jane Goodall put it in one of her books called The Ten Truths. She said it's the worst plan she's ever seen in her entire life. This is an embarrassment to Oregon. We can do better than this. Dr. Wilgress was hired by ODFW. He gave this report that you hold in your hand to ODFW, and ODFW made it confidential and swept it under the carpet. For a little while, they had it on their website, but they took it off. It might be there again, I don't know, and every once in a while it surfaces on the Internet. But it needs to be in your hands. It needs to be in Oregonians' hands, in the taxpayers' hands, the people that you're asking to make all these changes for, the people who voted in Measure 18 that you want to change without their vote or input. They deserve better science. Our ecosystem does. So I'm asking you, please, consider what Dr. Wilgress has said. Read his documents. He's approachable. I have his phone number. I have his emails. We can do this. But I want to see both sides do this. I want to see rural Oregon, and I want to see folks who live in Portland and Eugene. I want us all to pull together, because that's what really Oregon needs. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane, for your testimony. Kat? We'll see if there's any questions, so if you hold on just a minute.
Oh,
yeah. Go ahead.
Chair Dingfelder, thank you very much for allowing me and all the rest of you. My name is Catherine Kane, and I'm a retired teacher from the Eugene area. I have a Bachelor of Science degree and a Master's in Education. And for the last 25 years, I've been a wildlife advocate in Oregon, including being a past director of the Northwest Cougar Action Trust. I'll try and summarize and be more brief, but basically I'm just corroborating what the Humane Society or Cat and Predator Defense have all said about the extreme need for more scientific credibility. And I'd like to give you a little history, because I go back a long way telling the ODFW what I thought of them. And basically, to hear our plans denigrated so much, it sort of makes me laugh, because I know how they were created. They were fabricated. They had to be ODFW had to be dragged and kicking to make any sort of either a cougar plan or bear plan. And when they did, what it showed in their own statistics was that the age of bears being least reported, which, as you can tell, Howman hardly ever say nothing about where they've been or what they've done, of the reported ones, the age was already so young that they were under reproductive success age. In other words, the whole population of bears could have collapsed, which is why Howman say we have little bears in Oregon. They're not little bears, they're young bears, because no bears get to be very big around here. They look too good stuffed on somebody's shelf. So how they came upon this plan once forced into it was they fabricated the numbers in a very interesting way that an ODFW employee told me about himself, which was he told me the guy that did this and how he did it, and it's called the Monte Carlo method, in which you extrapolate a good guess about what you think might be happening, and then you sort of shuffle the numbers around until it says so. And the initial amount of bears that were supposed to be in Oregon, the first time he ran it through, were like 80 times more bears than there possibly could be. So he merely shuffled the numbers again around until they sounded a little more realistic. And another unrealistic thing is the number of cougars that they purport to have, which is cougars are limited by area. One male and three females act as a unit. They need a whole drainage. There's only so many drainages that don't have subdivisions and things in them. So you can't overpopulate cougars. You have the right number of cougars. So The ODFW, unfortunately, has spent a lot of money, and they have not done a very creditable job. We really need these independent peer reviews. That's how to make our science creditable, and then we can support what this is. So I hope that you will indeed listen to what all these groups are telling you, because it's very important that we add scientific credibility. And I just want to add in that NRA remark about, oh, it might cost money. Peer review is not us paying. You take input from other people. You can pay them if you want, but I know a whole bunch of scientists would love to peer review, and they won't charge you anything, so let me know if you need to know of any. So it isn't a very expensive thing. It would really help Oregon's wildlife, so thank you very much for listening to my testimony.
Great. Thank you very much, ladies. Let's see if there's any questions. Okay. Thank you for your testimony. I know you signed up for the next bill, too, so we will have you back up and... We'll have you back up in just a minute. We do have the representative here. You're fortunate. We're just at the end of the discussion about your amendment, and so welcome. And we have the original bill, House Bill 2252, and the Dash 2 amendment that you offered. Welcome.
Madam Chair, thank you so much. I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the legislature. Thank you for your time and consideration of the amendment. The members of the committee probably didn't expect to be hearing so much, and my apologies for not getting the amendment earlier to the members for consideration. But again, I appreciate your consideration now. The my experience with this issue, actually, I think started my first session in the legislature in 2005 when one of our constituents, Senator Bates, ranches out in the Applegate, said in her opinion what was happening with cougar management in the state was like giving the drunken teenagers the keys to the car. The way that cougars were being harvested were taking away the dominant male cougars and leaving younger male cougars who were causing additional damage to livestock and additional conflicts in both rural and more urban areas. In fact, in Ashland just 2 years ago, we had a cougar wander into a mobile home park near Shopping Cart Market, where I do most of my shopping, and the cougar wandered into the mobile home park, climbed a tree, and stayed there for most of a Sunday afternoon before it was taken down. So that comment by our constituent led me to start asking questions about what's actually going on with the cougar management plan. And the more I looked into it, the more concerned I became. In every other area of the budget that we work on, every other agency, we push hard to ask for, are you following evidence-based practices? What are the outcomes you're getting? What's the data that you're working from so that we can make the best possible decisions? I'm not a wildlife biologist, but I'm also not a doctor. I'm also not an educational specialist, but I have to make decisions based on the information I'm provided by people in the field who can give me the most accurate information possible about what our programs are doing and what outcomes we're receiving on them. We were able several years back to put a budget note, I think it was 2009, in the ODFW budget that required a study. The study came back. It was not clearly peer-reviewed. There was only really one wildlife biologist who didn't work for a different state agency from a different state in Wild Fish and Wildlife. And it was Dr. Weigelis in his research center in Washington. And their comments was that our cougar management plan had no basis in scientific fact. That was the comment that came back from the one review that was done. So when the commission decided last summer that they would no longer even perform a review of the cougar management plan, the bear management plan, it was a huge red flag for me. I don't know of any other agency in state government that we would say, it's okay for you to not review your programs. It's okay for you not to tell us what the outcome of your programs are. I don't think there's any other agency that we would simply accept that on. We've tried to craft this amendment, and we did work with Legislative Council to make sure it did fit within the relating clause. The Legislative Council assured us that this does fit into the relating clause of House Bill 2252. We have crafted this so there is no cost, there will be no pay, no compensation for anyone who is willing to enter into the peer review. And it's my hope that we'd finally get to the point where the commission and the department would be actually willing and open to have a review of their work,
done by their peers in a way that they could feel validated by their plan. If their plan is the best plan that could be put in place for Oregon, that would be great validation to have. If it's not, and it could be improved, that seems like all of us would want to know how we can improve what we do in our state. To me, it's a simple basis on that. And as to the possibility that the Washington State Research Center is somehow biased, I would hope the committee would look into that and just judge for yourself the track record of the research center and its reputation in the field as well. I believe they are noted to be experts in the field, something I definitely am not. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions for the Representative, Senator Olson?
Representative Buckley, thank you very much. question one thing only. The bill that you want to tuck it into is relating to wildlife, and I understand the relating to clause. That's a pretty important bill in the respect that it allows for uniformed services members to get a fishing license, hunting license in our state. Did you ever consider looking at House Bill 2027, which also is relating to wildlife, and it's the landholder tag program?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, no. My legislative assistant looked at whatever bills that were coming before your committee, and this is one of the bills that was scheduled to come forward, and that's why we chose this one.
Okay.
Be happy if the other bill is coming before your committee. Be happy to consider that bill.
We actually heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Just before that,
but it is until there has not been any work sessions, and obviously nothing's too late at this point.
So I asked the question to wonder if you had looked at 2027 in lieu of this bill.
I have not personally.
All right, thank you.
Senator Hansel, I did it again. I'm looking at him and saying yes.
Representative Buckley, thanks for coming. Was there any reason why these amendments were not put forward while the bill was still in the House working its way through? Why are we waiting until it gets over here on a House bill and you being a House leader coming to us now?
Madam Chair, Senator Hansel, we did present this as a bill in the House Ag Committee. The House Ag Committee did not see that it should go forward as a bill. So we looked for the ability to bring it forward again for consideration.
Thank you.
So you said that very tactfully. That's the way things go sometimes, what can you say? Well, thank you for bringing the amendment forward. Oh, Senator Bates.
Thanks. Senator Buckley, all you're really asking...
Representative Buckley.
Oh, Representative Buckley, didn't mean to insult you.
No, I've been called much worse, Senator.
But not often. What you're asking for here is a peer-reviewed study of certain plans every 5 years. That's all you're asking for. And I think it's more than appropriate. What I had a little bit of concern with was that the language is a little broad about which programs be viewed. There's a lot of programs they run. And requiring it every 5 years of all their programs might not be appropriate. Would you consider a slight change to calling out specific programs such as bears and cougars? I have to think there's a whole bunch of other programs, salmon and steelhead and cutthroat trout, and I can think of dozens of ground fish. I don't know. I'm just making this stuff up. Coyotes. Raccoons, I don't know. Snail pacers. I mean,
we're not going back to raccoons.
Yeah,
I've
been there already. Maybe we should limit this a little bit, because otherwise I think it's more than a reasonable thing to ask for.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, I'm obviously very much willing to discuss. I don't want to overload the department. I simply would like to make sure that the major management plans that we're responsible for are being done in the best way possible.
Okay, any other questions? Did you have one?
No.
All right. Thank you, Representative. And I have a feeling we're going to be having continued discussions on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Could we call Kurt Melcher back up and have him
certainly
talk about it?
You may want to stick around, Representative, if you have a minute. Kurt, you want to come back up? You going
to
have Ron, your lifeline, with you?
Okay,
we're going to do a work session at the end.
He's going spoiled.
The bill that's listed for work session. That's the large windy debris.
Thanks.
Welcome back, gentlemen.
Good afternoon again.
Yep. Okay, Senator, do you have a question?
I would just like to ask your opinion and comment on what you've heard on the Cougar Management Plan. and your plan that you did in the report that was filed contrary to your plan.
Sure. Well, Chair Dingfelder and Vice Chair Olson, certainly, actually, we didn't know this amendment and this whole discussion of the Cougar plan, per se, was going to occur here this afternoon, so I did not personally go back and review the peer review that was conducted in 2009, and it is accurate that there was a budget note in 2009, a fairly specific budget note, which we did adhere to. We did send our Cougar plan out to a number of wildlife professionals around the western U.S., including Dr. Wilgus, for review. Ron may be a little bit more well-versed in the actual details of that review than I am, just entirely off the cuff here, so I'll lean on Ron a little bit. I think with regard to cougar management, we've acknowledged all along that we don't have perfect science. Cougars are not an easy species to inventory. And I don't think anyone here or anyone in our department or even any of our constituency would argue that case. I think many of our constituency actually argues just the opposite, in fact, that we are underestimating the number of cougars, that that our science is wrong, and we're by far underestimating the number of cougars. But so we have a model. I think, you know, models are informative. Every model is wrong to some degree. Models are informative. We've used that model for trend information over the last several decades at least, and we're confident that we have more cougars now than we did in 1994, than we did in 1974, than we did in 1964. Now, we could certainly argue whether we have 6,000 or 5,000 or 9,000, but we certainly know relative to where we've been over the last 50 years that we have a lot more cougars now than we did in the 1960s. And frankly, this is one of, and I'll get off my soapbox and turn it over to Ron. You know, cougars are truly a success story in Oregon. And there are many wildlife and fish success stories. They occur over many decades, so we don't often just instantly see the response. But cougar numbers in the mid-1960s were down to very, very low levels. And for anyone who's been in Oregon for any amount of time, spent any time in the woods in the 1960s, they did not see cougars. Now, relatively common. So it's truly a success story. With success, obviously, comes conflict. We have the same situation in terms of geese and goose management. With success, we have far, far many geese now than we did 30 years ago. With success comes conflict, and we deal with that across many levels. So, Ron, do you want to talk a little bit about the review that was conducted in 2009? I'm going to hand it over to Ron for that. Chair Dingfelder.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. For the record, again, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. We did send it out for peer review to scientists within other agencies and university system. We did get a broad suite of comments. We did some of that same peer review when we adopted the plan, or when we took the plan to the commission back in 2006, and we did make changes to the plan based on that. We always look for that scientific input. You know, one thing I would comment on with peer review is, within our scientific community, you never pay for peer review. That's just a no-no to do that. And we have not contracted with Dr. Wiglis or anybody else to do any kind of review for us. We have some of Dr. Wiglis's students actually working for us as an agency now. So, you know, we have looked to the science that has come out of his shop up there and how we can incorporate that here into Oregon. So, you know, we take the comments to heart. We have, in Northeast Oregon, we're just finishing up a PhD project on cougars and deer and elk interaction, and that'll be up for defense and publishing here in the near future. We currently have a statistician under contract at the University of Nebraska on another cougar model. that we're hoping will be out for peer review and published. I was hoping last fall, but it's likely to be sometime this summer. And once we have that kind of information, we will use that to inform us in any future revisions to the plan or any changes we need to make to what we're doing right now. So we are going to be conducting a review of the management plan this summer, and we'll have it in front of our commission in September down in Medford. When, you know, the reference that Representative Buckley made to the plans, we do have a multiple plans, Senator Bates, you are correct, that would be touched on by this, and our intent, you know, last time I counted it up just on the wildlife side of things, I think we had somewhere between 13 and 15 plans. Our intent is that we will review those on a regular basis in front of the commission, and based on the input that we get, we will, when appropriate, we will be going in and making changes to the plans. But the plans are written to be adaptive.
Right. So, Ron, I have a question about that, and, you know, we might have, and we might want to have you come back and sort of do a more thorough presentation about the Cougar plan. For those of us who are in the House and spent many, 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 many hours listening to testimony before the development of those plans, I think it might be helpful if you can spend a little time with the members, and it may be one-on-one, just updating them on how the plan was developed. However, something that you touched upon, because we, as you've already mentioned, adaptive management is something that you employ. You know, we've been having discussions, obviously. Senator Hansel and I went out to Eastern Oregon. Wolf Management Plan was adopted several years ago, and we're making updates as we go. Is there any, it sounds like you do not have a policy for, regular policy for review of your management plans. Is there, does the commission or the agency have a policy to go back every, let's say, 5 years and do periodic reviews without muddying the waters here and thinking about our land use system, but periodic reviews of our existing wildlife management plans for adaptive management purposes?
I think, Chair Dingfelder, it's covers the full spectrum. And we have, for many, many years, had a hard 5-year review in rule associated with most of our plans, but not all of our plans. Frankly, in the case of bears and cougars, there was not a lot changing in reviewing the plan every 5 years. We can have staff essentially doing full-time planning responsibilities if we reviewed every one of our fish and wildlife plans every 5 years. In the case of the wolf plan, as you mentioned, we do still have a 5-year review window, but there's an important reason for that. Wolf status is changing dramatically, annually, let alone on a 5-year scale, both in terms of their recovery, recolonization, changes in listing status, both federally and perhaps soon state listing status, all those things in flux, changing. So we retained the 5-year review schedule on the wolf plan. We did not retain the 5-year schedule on either the bear or the cougar plan because, frankly, there wasn't much changing. But populations were high, seasons fully utilized in terms of all the tools that the commission has to address cougar harvest in terms of population control. Wasn't much changing, so didn't see the need to do a 5-year review. Our 5 years was, frankly, arbitrary.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator?
Ron, you had mentioned that you sent this out for this report that you did for peer review. Was Dr. Wilgus the only one that responded?
No.
Or do you know that? Or if you don't know that, could you get that back to me?
Senator Dingfelder and Senator Olson, he was not the only one that responded. I don't have all the actual responses just off the top of my head, so we would have to get back to you with that.
Thank you.
If you could, we'd appreciate
it. Yeah, and I was going to mention that. We did receive a number of responses. I don't know. I know I heard there was a reference to that we had buried them or hidden them or made them non-public. They're all publicly available. I remember we distributed them I think in the 2011 session, we distributed every, you know, it was a packet about that thick of comments on from individuals that reviewed our Cougar plan.
Are those available online? I mean, I don't know what our official peer review policy is, frankly, and I think that is something good to have a discussion with the commission. And I don't know if, I mean, I would think that's something we'd want to have available online for if folks would like to review that. So
yeah, I think, well, certainly the plan is online. I don't know that this individual comments are still online. They certainly were at some point, but we definitely still have them and can provide those.
Okay. Senator Bates?
You've touched on one already. I'd like to see the actual peer reviews. You got back all of them. Just look through if they're available.
Yep.
You know, especially if they're online. I don't want you printing up and harvesting half the forest to do it. Just just give me the peer reviews, and I like to go through them. I enjoy that kind of stuff, and give me a better idea of how accurate or inaccurate that can be. Whenever I think of cougar management, I always think it's an oxymoron how you manage cougars. I mean, can't.
Well,
I've been closely involved in my farm a lot, and they come and go, and they're at night, and you don't see them, and it's very interesting. The other issue, though, is what you might want to rethink. Probably two of the hottest issues in the state about wildlife management in the last 15 years, and I'm frankly sick of it, is cougars and bears. And to decide not to review that management plan every 5 years is really, quite frankly, a lapse of judgment. You're going to hear about it from the public, and you might as well just go ahead and do it, because you're going to hear about it, and then we're going to hear about it, and I don't want to hear about it anymore.
Okay? Well, unfortunately, okay. Senator, we have another bill, which
I don't know.
And I'm going to wrap this one up because
I'm whining. I'll stop whining.
Senator Hansel, I got that right this time.
Just very quickly, when you do a peer review plan, are there any expenses to the department? And if so, what do you know what we're looking at? I know you don't pay the person to do the review, but I would think staff time and others, there's got to be some type of cost.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, I think Ron did mention that, no, in general, on a true peer review that's blind, you don't even know who the reviewers are going to be. You don't go out and necessarily pick who you get as your reviewer because there's can be bias introduced. And generally, no, there's no cost or no pay associated with a true peer review. I think for us, and again, we just saw this amendment literally as we arrived here today, but for us, and Ron mentioned it, and I think Senator Bates mentioned it as well, we have many, many plans as it relates to both fish and wildlife. Statutorily, wildlife generally refers to both fish and wildlife. We have many, many plans with a variety of review schedules to mandate that every one of them be reviewed at least every 5 years. I think that's where the fiscal impact is going to come in, associated with continuous review of every plan that we've got. That's where the true impact would be as it relates to any cost or fiscals associated with the.
Although we do know that you have some additional funds in your ending balance now from the other bill, so there you go. But anyway.
You would have to give us the approval, Chair, to spend those funds, of course.
I am on the subcommittee. We have a few Ways and Means members here. Okay, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close this public hearing because we have one more public hearing to go and a work session. Gentlemen, just stay where you are. We're going to close the public hearing on, this is House Bill 2252. We're going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2390A.
I'm just grabbing my testimony.
I thought you were leaving.
No.
I was like, he's had it.
No, don't leave me.
Beth, why don't you? You're sending, you're going to leave Ron up here to the wolves. Sorry.
Chair and committee members, House Bill 2390A reveals the sunset on provisions specifying how Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife appoints a person to act as an agent for the purpose of using one or more dogs to hunt or pursue black bear or cougars, and requires the commission to report biennially to the governor and the legislature on their appointment of agents.
So, sorry, Senator Bates, I know you mentioned you're tired of bearing. We seem to have a proliferation of these bills every session, so we are going to hear what this is the department brought this forward. Is this correct?
Absolutely. It's, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, and I can be very brief on this testimony. You're getting written version as well. House Bill 2390A essentially removes the sunset associated with our Cougar Agent program. So if you recall, when ballot measure 18 passed in 1994, There was provisions that allowed the agency and our agents to use, continue to use hounds, dogs to pursue bears and cougars as it relates to human safety, livestock depredation, and big game management or game management purposes. Unfortunately, we did not have clear statutory provisions that allowed us to use agents, and in particular volunteer agents. So in 2007, I believe it was, we had a bill here that was adopted by the legislature that gave us that clear authority to use volunteer agents, to basically appoint agents to do work for us for, to address human safety concerns or livestock depredation. That bill has a sunset date of January 2nd of 2014. We've been implementing now this program over the last 6 years, and we have a number of volunteers that we've used, volunteer agents that we've appointed and used over the last several years. We're simply asking you to extend the, or eliminate the sunset and continue to allow us to use agents. And I would point out that this bill, at the request, and maybe they're going to testify here later, but at the request of some individuals on the House side, we had worked with Humane Society of the United States and others, and adopted an amendment in this bill that requires us to report to the legislature on our use of agents biennially. So with that, Chair Dingfelder, I'm happy to answer any questions or get off of this chair.
There's a hesitation on the word happy there, but it's okay. We'll see if there's any questions for these gentlemen.
Just a comment. I had not planned to be here when the sunset came up. I was intimately involved in writing and getting this bill done, and I didn't think I'd be here when it came back up. We need longer sunsets.
Or shorter terms.
All right.
Ooh.
All right. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks. I think you're off the hook for right now, but stick around. Okay, and because we are, I'm going to call up panels. It doesn't mean you're on the same side of the issue, but I'm just going to call you up as written down here. Jane Miller, Kat Cohen, and Al Elkins. I will ask you if you could please summarize your testimony, especially if you have written testimony, because we are going to start losing members, and I still have a work session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. I sent the testimony via electronic late last night. So essence, so we support the bill. All this does is removes the sunset, extends the sunset, and we support agents and what they do in the field.
Same thing.
That concludes my testimony.
Okay, thank you. Jane, I am going to, we have your testimony written. I'm going to ask if you can summarize it, please.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't support any bills currently that kill cougar with hounds because our science is flawed and inaccurate. We need to get that corrected. Our science was based on a biased opinion by two gentlemen who started the cougar model count. Kiesler was the first one. I don't remember the name of the second one, but they are vested with ODFW. We need someone to come outside unbiased peer review to correct our cougar model count. We do not have 6,000, 4,000. Or 5,000 cougar. California, decades ban on killing cougar. Bigger state, more open spaces. They no longer have cougar on their northern border, and they have a population of 4,000 cougar, and they're declining. State of Washington implements the same hunting programs as the state of Oregon. Their cougar have dropped from 3,000 to 1,600 cougar. Oregon has stated that we've had a consistent population of cougar of 6,000 since 2006. Not biologically possible. Dr. Wilkes references that. On his document, he says, the analysis are almost entirely descriptive in nature. There was little or no use of statistical hypothesis stating to provide reliable tests and conclusions. Claims made in this report seem to be based on predetermined beliefs and philosophical positions, not scientific evidence. And he says the scientific design of the study was seriously flawed. There's no treatments or controls and no accounting for the hypothesis. So we cannot, these bills require sound science, and we don't have sound science. So any cougar bill, I ask you to vote no until we get our act together with the cougar management program. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Kat.
Hi, thank you, Chair Dingfelder. I will try and make this brief. There are five main reasons why you should not pass this bill. Number one, there is no need for this bill. There's no evidence that Measure 18 is not working. In fact, it's been working very well and has provisions built into it that make this law unnecessary. The ODFW documented that no domestic animals were attacked or killed in their 3-year study that they did. And most importantly, no person has ever been hurt or attacked by any cougars in the history of Oregon, including in the past 20 years that Measure 18 has been around.
Can you state your name again, please, just to make sure you get it for the record?
Catherine Kane. It's spelled K-O-E-H-N, and my ex-husband's family pronounces it Kane for some reason.
Thank you.
Anyhow, the voters have made their voice clear that they think that hound hunting is unethical just to please a bunch of trophy hunters. Number two, monetarily, this is just crazy talk to spend another $500,000 to placate a small group of special interest. And I believe $4,770 was spent or something to that effect. I mean, almost $500,000. Anyhow, because cougars are the most valuable species we have in the forest. They're an apex species that encourages and stabilizes ecosystems. And we need that peer review, too, because you can't base population estimates on sightings and complaints. In fact, the few studies that were ever completed by the ODFW in the Umpqua and in the Wallawa showed that virtually all the cougars were dead of the radio-collared cougars were dead by the time the study ended, and I'll be glad to point them out to you if you're interested. Number three, this goes against scientific wildlife management, and the most important point about that is that the territorial nature of cougars, as Representative was speaking earlier about, is that because of their territorial nature, for every cat you kill, you encourage 3 or 4 more to come in, and they are the younger, more dangerous ones, like Representative Buckley pointed out. Hence, allowing the wholesale slaughter of cougars will create a public safety threat because it causes conflicts between humans and livestock. Number five, the poaching epidemic would be made worse if you pass this bill. I don't know if you're aware of it, but we are in the middle of a poaching epidemic, and Oregon houndmen have a long history of proudly poaching. Of course, they never report stuff like that 5% that Jane mentioned earlier. You just can't get them to tell where they got those bears, even though it's mandatory reporting, right? I think they said they were going to stop the hunt if they didn't have a better compliance rate. And the name Ray Hilsman springs to mind, who was called the Al Capone of Oregon because he was so blatant in his poaching, and the notorious Johnny Young, who was the president of the Oregon Sporting Dogs Association when he was caught poaching on a number of charges and sentenced. They're doing this for money, for gallbladders, and it's part of an international black market in animal parts. And the CITES treaty says that bears worldwide are threatened, and they put them in category 2 because they're being hunted all over the world for these galls, which the houndmen can make a lot of money on. I would advise you to please heed the words of Jackman Wilson, who's the editor of the second largest paper in the state, when he printed last month a scathing editorial that began with the headline, "What Cougar Crisis?" He pointed out the long pattern of the same small group of special interests that I noticed that you guys all have made comment about, that constantly are pestering the legislature for the last 20 years and are never successful because it would be stupid to follow what they're recommending. In summary, there is no way that you should encourage houndmen to harass and kill cougars to benefit a small percentage of trophy hunters, and would open the door to a new wave of poaching with hounds. The voters of Oregon have made it their voice clear for 20 decades. They think hound hunting is unethical. Please do not let special interests make our laws. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
I have the two names. I have a correction. May I make a correction?
Yes.
Thank you. On your front page of the document that I handed out to you on the peer review, Dr. Wilgress does address the model that Kester and Van Dyke made in 2000, the cougar population model. He said the statewide cougar population, including sub-area population, is estimated at over a little over 5,000. The model estimates for each area must be verified by numerical data, and this has not been done here. The estimates for this treatment and control areas have no scientific validity because of lack of verification. So we really do not know how many cougar we have in Oregon. Honestly, we don't. And that needs to be corrected. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, ladies, for your testimony. We have Sally Mackler, Scott Beckstead, and Ian Tolson left to testify. And then we do have a work session, so I'm going to ask folks not to run off. So I'll try to snare Senator Hass back. Welcome.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States. So that you have a little bit of my personal background, I was raised in southern Idaho. I grew up in a very active hunting family. I understand the sportsman's ethic. So, but I want to talk about House Bill 2390, and I want to make sure that you understand that from the perspective of the Humane Society, we would have a lot less objection to 2390 if we understood exactly what was going on with Oregon's cougars. And there is a reason why there is a sunset provision on this law. In 2007, when the law that created the right to use these agents was passed, it was passed with a lot of controversy, and a lot of wildlife advocates really opposed this law. And so in acknowledgement of that controversy and that opposition, this sunset provision was created to give an opportunity to review. The problem is, again, we don't know exactly what's going on with Oregon's cougars because we're not using the best available science. So the Humane Society of the United States is in opposition to House Bill 2390, and I would just point out that the bill locks into place the use of agents, which is highly controversial and is viewed by many wildlife advocates as simply a backdoor way of allowing these houndsmen to engage in behavior that was outlawed by the majority of Oregonians as being unacceptably cruel and unfair. The Register Guard, the Albany Democrat Herald, the Medford Mail Tribune, and the Grants Pass Daily Courier have all editorialized against rolling back protections for cougars. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally.
Yeah. Thank you. My name's Sally Mackler. I'm here again, and I'm just as tired as Senator Bates is of going over and over and over this issue. If I had a dime for all the hours I've spent on it, I'd be a billionaire by now. But anyway, we are Predator Defense is opposed to continuing use of trophy hunters as agents of the state in the field to kill down cougar populations. I think that the provision for their use that was mentioned before, which was part of Measure 18. The intent behind that really was that these very extreme practices be used strictly and solely for the benefit of the public, to protect public safety and protect livestock. And the Cougar Management Plan, as it is written now and as it is in practice right now, includes target zones, which are specified areas, geographic areas throughout the state where these agents are employed to go into the zones using hounds and snares to trap and hold indiscriminately every cougar that they come upon and remove that cougar from the population. This is an indiscriminate practice as opposed to a very discriminate practice which the voters agreed upon, which is to single out the occasional problem cougar that causes conflict and remove that cougar. That's what dogs are for. If they are brought to the scene immediately, they can find scent on the ground, or they can track the single cougar that's causing a problem. That was what the intent behind Measure 18 was, to allow that to happen and to allow the use of dogs for that purpose, not for the indiscriminate killing down of cougar populations in prescribed areas, which is what's going on in these target zones now. Currently, there are four target zones which have been in position since, I think, 2007, and they are strictly 2009. But they are strictly and solely oriented toward increasing hunting opportunity. They are in prime deer and elk habitat. They are in very remote areas of the state and have absolutely no bearing on protection of public safety or protection of livestock. So I encourage you to learn more about the Cougar Management Plan and to recognize that the nature of the work that these agents are doing, I believe, is predominantly in these target zones and is not in response to the occasional problem that arises where the use of dogs is, in our belief, appropriate and what the citizens intended to happen. And the other concern that we have, as I mentioned before, and I'm going to be very brief, is that this is exactly the kind of management that Dr. Wielgus's 15-plus years in the field have shown to create conflicts by changing the age structure of the cougar population. So if your goal is to increase public safety and reduce conflicts, then this type of management, given the body of research that's available out there, which has come into play, we need to consider that research and put our resources toward protection of the public and not toward improving hunting opportunities by killing cougars down in target zones. And that's what those agents, I believe, are spending most of their time doing. So thank you very much. And also the cost factor, $1,500 per cougar.
If I can ask you to...
Okay, that's it. I'm done. But since the beginning of the plan, if you look at the numbers, and I've provided you with the data, which I received from ODF&W, the average cost to kill approximately 312 cougars has been $1,500 per cat. I don't know if that's fiscally responsible in this economy.
Thank you.
Hello, members of committee, Chair Dingfelder. My name is Ian Tullis, and I represent Oregon Farm Bureau. I think the department did a good job of setting up the issue with House Bill 2390. Oregon Farm Bureau supports this piece of legislation. These agents are licensed by state officials in accordance with Measure 18 to enact management objectives. We can fight about the science, the numbers all day long, but this is the numbers we have. This is how we enforce those management objectives, and we support that. The negative effects of a large cougar population is seen on our farms, and we need this tool to help address that. I would just like to point out that $1,500 is a lot of money per cougar, but in her testimony, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, but it's actually reduced down to $700 now, and I think that would probably continue to reduce and follow that trend. I'm not sure how much it would cost if the state would do it, but it could be more, it could be less, but that cost is steadily declining. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panelist?
I have one. Mm-hmm. Ms. Mackler, mm-hmm. It says on the bill on line 17 of page 1 that an agent acts on the department's behalf and, subject to the department's direction and control, implements specific management programs of the department. My question is, are you saying that the Department of Fish and Wildlife sends these folks out specifically to kill large cats?
Yes, absolutely. Review the Cougar Management Plan.
Yeah, that's how it works.
I believe the bill, excuse me.
That's okay.
Chair Dinkman.
And we will, I think we're probably going to have the department come and do a little Cougar Management 101
that would be
after
awesome.
This. And we probably should have had that first before these bills. But, yeah, that's
okay.
How it works.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Oh, Senator Hanselman, sorry.
I was going to say, since you felt that the sunset was a part of a coming together kind of thing, would you be in favor of extending the sunset, keeping it there rather than removing it?
They do that too.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, the Humane Society of the United States would feel a lot better about repealing the sunset if we knew that it was going to happen hand in hand with an opportunity for meaningful review of the Oregon Cougar Management Plan. Does that answer your question?
Sure.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Anybody else like to testify on this before we close the public hearing?
Cougars.
Any cougars that want to come up? Oh, okay, sorry. All right, with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2027. I hope you got the message that we need to make sure and post your testimony for OLIS, okay? You'll follow up with Beth. Okay, thank you. We have, that's it for the public hearings. We do have a work session. I'll go ahead and open the work session on House Bill 2396A. If you recall, colleagues, this is the Woody Debris Bill is back. We have an amendment, the Dash 4s. We had a two folks, Mr. Myron and Mr. Angstrom, working on this. Why don't we have both of you come up? Although, there he is. He just magically appeared out of thin air. I was going to say, no dead wood on this bill. I'm waiting for you guys to come up with better puns. Okay. Gentlemen, we do have the Dash 4 A4s. If you would like to speak to those, I do believe that you both worked on those, and I do believe these are consensus amendments. Is that correct?
Yes. For the record, my name is Jim Meyer, and I'm here representing the Native Fish Society. And yes, Mr. Angstrom and I have been working feverishly over the last two or three weeks since this bill passed the House to come to agreement on some on the Dash 4 amendments in front of you. We have also been working under the auspices of Representative Witt, the sponsor of the bill, so he is certainly aware and supportive, I believe. Rich can speak a little more to that. But the idea behind the amendments were to help define, well, part of the amendments redefine or add some additional definitions to the woody debris. And it talks about naturally occurring woody debris rather than you know, if it's not naturally occurring. So to address some questions that were raised during the initial hearing on the bill. The other piece is an acknowledgement that wood placed in stream as part of a habitat conservation plan, habitat restoration, is also protected as woody debris under the terms of the bill, which is an important consideration. Beyond that, the other changes occur primarily in Section 5 of the bill, where the exemptions to the requirement to get a permit occur. And as the bill came out of the House, a number of us were concerned about how broad those exemptions were. And the Dash 4 amendments attempt to narrow that down quite a bit, and it does do that in the transportation section of the exemptions, and also specifically calls out navigation as an exempt piece of it. There's still in Section 5, Sub 1 of the bill, there's language about direct and demonstrable danger, which is still undefined, but we've been talking with the Department of State Lands, and I think if Bill Ryan were here, he would say that they will be able to do some public outreach, some educational outreach to landowners to help more clearly define what those terms mean and when it can be used by landowners. The department has also said that they would be pleased to provide some kind of a periodic report to the legislature on the implementation of the program, so that if additional issues are raised over time, they can be addressed in a timely manner.
So, thank you.
I'm sure you can,
Rich, you
add something to that, sir.
My name is Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association, and I just wanted to quickly say that I think the amendments actually strengthen the bill and make more clear the definitions of what the definition of large woody debris is, that captures what was raised by Senator Olson on making sure it was natural. But also making sure that the unnatural stuff, which is that stuff that's placed for purposes of habitat protection, is also protected. So we carved out the universe just right, I think, on that. The second set of amendments, I really strengthened it, and I did want to go over the sub two real quick, which is poses a risk of harm to transportation facilities. Including but not limited culverts, bridges, roads located in the beds and banks of the rivers. That's important to all the farm, forest, and aggregate folks, and as material moves down, plugging up culverts can be quite a problem.
The bill now still maintains the, you know, the balance that was necessary between landowners' ability, all of the landowner community ability to manage large woody debris and its destructive effects, but allowing large woody debris in those areas where it can improve habitat. And I think it's a pretty good bill at this point. So with that, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen. I just want to mention, first of all, appreciate the work that you both did, because I think we did threaten to lock you in a room and see if you can come out with the consensus amendment. And I wanted to thank my vice chair for suggestions on improving the bill. Not that we don't trust you, but we did check with Representative Witt, and we do have a direct line of communication via our staff that said he is supportive of this amendment. Of course, we would want to make sure. So we'll see if there's any questions before I take a motion. Okay, I will accept a motion.
Send Chair Dingfelder, I move to adopt the -4 amendments dated 4/19/2013.
Okay, Center also moves to adopt the -A4 amendments dated 4/19/2013. Is there any discussion? And I probably should have asked, mentioned that we do have the department available if there's any questions. Okay. No discussion. Is there any objections?
For the record.
Oh, and Beth, can you make, for the record?
There's a minimal fiscal impact statement, no statement issued, and then no revenue impact on the -A4.
Great. Thank you for that reminder. No objection. The amendments are adopted. Take another motion.
Chair Dingfelder, I move House Bill 2396A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator also moves House Bill 2396A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Hanson?
Aye.
Senator Hast?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Aye. With that, the motion passes. And Senator Olson, because of your hard work on this, would you be willing to carry
it? Absolutely.
Thank you. Please note that Senator Olson will be the carrier. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2396A. Beth, anything else for the good of the order?
No.
Okay. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.